Hey everyone, welcome back to the Transmission Podcast. I'm Wendell, and this episode I'm joined by Harrison Moore from Azure Capital, a key financial advisor helping to get battery energy storage projects in Australia off the ground. We get into the weeds of what it takes to get a BESS project financed in the NEM, the steps, the challenges, and the evolving investor appetite for merchant grid-scale storage. We also talk about how different commercial structures change the financeability of batteries, the impact of policies such as the CIS, and whether there's enough advisory and capital bandwidth to meet the scale of the pipeline in Australia. If you're curious about the financial structures behind the energy transition, then this one's for you. If you're enjoying the show, please hit like and subscribe. It really helps to grow our reach. Let's dive in. Harrison, welcome to the Transmission Podcast. I think just to start off with, could you just, give a bit of an introduction to yourself and what you do.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. So Harrison Moore, partner at Azure Capital, been with the firm for coming up on 11 years now, working in transactions for the better part of 16, and I do M&A, so buy side, sell side, and capital advisory, so help people raise debt and equity for projects. As a firm, we've been around for over 20 years, and one of our big areas of focus is energy renewables, and that's the part of the business that I'm responsible for, and batteries in particular. So I've worked on over transactions over 10 gigawatts in batteries.
So yeah, within those sort of projects, then what's the role that, I guess,
what do we do?
Yeah, end up playing.
So basically, we're the advisory capacity. So we're bringing together all the different work streams within a transaction, whether or not that's on a diligence side of things. It's sort of coordinating with people on the project side of things, on offtake, whatever it might be, bringing that all together to get funding arranged for a project. So on batteries, by way of example, we're working on a number of battery financings at the moment. We're coordinating with the client. We're coordinating with different funding partners. So in this case, banks, to pull together effectively a financing package. Part of that involves, you know, optimizing the terms. So working with lenders to make sure we're getting the right structure that sits around that. That's about managing risk. It's also about getting, you know, the best pricing, the right amount of debt into the structure so that's sustainable, and about how do we kind of bring all those different stakeholders together. So we've a lot of project management role in that as well.
Yeah, so someone will come to you with a project, but ultimately that needs financing, funding from somewhere because they can't do it all themselves.
Yeah.
And they'll...
People come to us at different stages in a project, right? So most often someone might be, you know, within 6 months of reaching notice to proceed, so their project's almost ready at the start line. They're going to hit go on construction and get into to building something. So there's a lot of work, obviously, that goes into development, securing land, approvals. Often you have some form of offtake, so committed revenue stream as part of that, and then procurement. So, you know, who's going to be building what? All those packages are sort of brought together, and then we're involved to kind of bring in the financing, the funding package for that. And often that comes from banks, effectively.
Yeah. I was going to ask about the timelines. Like, is 6 months like a typical kind of timeline for a project?
Yeah. Normally a process for us is probably, you know, 6 months, and the first part of that's just preparation. So when we actually engage with the finance community, that they're ready to go, what we want to be doing is running an efficient process. There's a lot of activity in the market. People are busy. And so what they're looking for is for you to make their life easy, right? And so there's a lot of preparation work that goes into that to pull everything together so it's easy for lenders to sort of navigate their credit process. And that usually takes, you know, 2, 3, 4 months working with our clients, various other consultants in order to actually get it to that point that we can engage formally with the market. And then a credit approval process might take a couple of months to actually get through. There's transaction documentation and then to actually get through to signing and then ticking off any conditions precedent prior to actually closing on a financing. We do get involved a bit earlier sometimes. So some of our clients, we may have been involved 12, 24 months before they actually get to financial close. In those circumstances, we'll be helping feed into key project contracts around bankability to make sure it's ready when it gets to the end, any commercial overlay. Sometimes we get involved in offtake procurement as well. So what's the commercialization strategy? How are you going to bring in an offtaker to help give you a certain piece of the revenue stack?
I think that bit's really interesting for me because it's obviously the most of the focus is on the financial side, but then it does that mean you need pretty good understanding of what's happening with the asset, the energy market in general?
Yeah, exactly right. So our role, as much as most of the people come from, say, a corporate finance background, you have to understand the fundamentals of finance and how those things fit together. You also need to have subject matter expertise around the energy market, around the technology, in this case, batteries, understand how all those things fit together in order to bring it all together and actually run a successful financing process. And so in our organization, people actually come from a wide variety of backgrounds. So you have a number of people that, you know, are finance professionals. We also have people that have come out of developers or project finance banks. There's real diversity in the team, which is deliberate in terms of, you know, how do we kind of leverage the different skills required in order to deliver a financing.
Awesome. And I mean, yeah, would you be able to like walk me through, let's say, yeah, if we had the sort of example of a battery project, like what are the different stages? I think you mentioned a few of them there that have to be reached in order to essentially reach that financial close, notice to proceed.
Yep, sure. So your land needs to be secured. You've secured your tenure. You need to have all your approvals. So the right to actually go and build what it is that you're planning to build, to operate it. You need to have your connection, which is often one of the longer lead items when it comes to batteries. So the capacity to actually connect to the network and operate your battery. And then you need to have all your procurement in place. So, you know, where are you going to get your battery from? Who's going to build it locally? And then what are you going to do on the revenue side? So are you going to have a contract with a third party to give you a guaranteed revenue profile? Are you going to have some merchant exposure? Increasingly, we're seeing a bit of a mix of both. And lenders need to see all those things in place and committed before they're prepared to lend you money.
Yeah, if you think about this project, so is there like a sort of certain size project, or how do things change at different scales? Because so one thing in the Australian market is, I would say, the scale of battery being built is pretty big,
yep.
Especially on average. And that compares, I think, very differently to, say, how we see things in the UK market. As the size of the project increases, how do things change?
In terms of the market here, it's evolved rapidly, and, you know, the projects have just become bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, the first projects we're working on might have been, you know, 50 or sub 50 megawatts. You know, and fast forward to a couple of years ago, we're working on something like Waratah Super Battery, 850 megawatts. You know, the projects are sort of getting a lot bigger. The majority of what we're seeing are probably more in that 200 to 400 megawatt type space at the moment. And part of the reason for that is the economies of scale. So the kind of the effort that goes into actually developing a project, the procurement piece, and then if you can get a connection and your revenue model stacks up, it actually makes sense to be building a slightly bigger project. There is some declining utility at some point on the revenue side, particularly with FCAS markets, you know, as your projects do get bigger, but increasingly FCAS is becoming, you know, less important, and it's more around energy arbitrage. And so to the extent you can build a bigger project, then, you know, that's the direction of the market. And really there's a demand for energy storage. The market is currently short energy storage, and battery energy storage is sort of the cheapest, most cost-effective, quickest pathway to market at the moment.
Is there, I guess, a point, because obviously, yeah, as the projects get bigger, the cost of them gets bigger. Is there a point at which it kind of fundamentally changes a kind of your role, or say the investors who are getting involved?
Yeah, I think the market just evolves and adapts. Certainly some of the checks are getting bigger. And so, you know, the number of banks that are participating in any given deal, or the number of, you know, equity funding partners that you might see in any particular deal, you know, that might change. But at the moment, there is, I'd say, more liquidity in the market, more demand to invest in this asset class than there is investable opportunity. That will likely change over time, but the outlook for battery energy storage, I'd say, is relatively positive, particularly in the context of a, you know, a transitioning energy market. The likelihood of, you know, volatility for the foreseeable future, and an asset class which effectively allows you to participate in that and also facilitates that transition.
Yeah, I think that's obviously one of the things that's so well, almost unique to the Australian market is that volatility, which I think we'll come back to. Within those stages that you described in terms of getting a project, you know, financed ultimately, are there any bottlenecks that you typically see happening, like kind of on these projects?
Yeah, one of the biggest challenges for getting a battery to the start line and into construction is aligning all those different work streams I talked about, and the biggest one of those would be the connection. And there's a bit of a logjam of projects trying to get through the connection process, and there's a constraint in terms of processing those connection applications to get people connected, because you've got, you know, a relatively complex set of assets all trying to come into the grid, and people trying to forecast what the implications of those different assets sort of connecting at different points in time at different locations. And that takes time to work through. And currently that's creating a bit of a logjam. It also creates sort of a challenge in lining up the different work streams, because you're going to your battery supplier and saying, oh, I need a price on the basis of my project getting a connection at this date. That date slips, you're going back to your battery supplier and asking that same question, the same of your off-taker, and it just makes it very difficult to sort of manage a timeline on a project. And the implication of that is uncertainty, and it goes to price. And so the cost of your battery might be higher, or the price of your offtake might be lower in the absence of certainty. And it's part of the reason we've started to see some project proponents actually commit to building projects without certainty on their network connection, or without certainty on their offtake, just so they can remove that risk and then solve for it later once they have certainty on their project timeline and delivery.
And so, yeah, that connection process, that's ultimately managed by AEMO, right? And so I guess it's this one party, and I don't know how big their team is working on this, but...
Yeah, it's a combination, right? So part of it's AEMO, and then part of it's kind of the transmission network service providers in each relevant sort of state and territory. And so it's a combination of those things.
Yeah, it's like Transgrid, for example.
Exactly, yeah.
Awesome. And if we, I guess, look at the like kind of investor picture a bit, you mentioned there was kind of a lot of probably appetite from investors at the moment. Has that changed in the last, say, like 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, massively. So a few years ago, I'd say there wasn't really an investable battery market in Australia, so it is relatively new. The first investable battery opportunities we started seeing were most commonly co-located, so existing generation assets, whether or not that's wind or in particular solar, people looking to co-locate a battery, share a connection, and there's some complementarity between those assets. We started seeing that more frequently a few years ago, and then the market quickly evolved into standalone batteries, and the market has sort of evolved rapidly, and the liquidity required in that part of the market is huge, right? Like the number of battery opportunities that there are in the market versus the supply of capital means that there's a lack of investable opportunity at the moment. And so that is both on the debt and the equity side of things. A number of financings we ran last year for batteries were multiples oversubscribed. So there was more lender demand trying to sort of put out balance sheet than there was actual capacity to do so. And we're continuing to see that this year as well. In my sort of 16 odd years doing this, it's the quickest I've seen the lender universe actually get educated and become progressive in a sector from a few years ago where lenders wouldn't consider merchant exposure lending against that, to now actually being prepared to kind of take a decent amount of merchant exposure. Still often a preference for as much contracting as possible, but at least a willingness to look at that as part of the revenue stack when lending.
What do you think is behind that? I guess, yeah, the kind of general appetite and also, yeah, the shift.
Yeah, I think there's an understanding that there's a requirement to build out storage to support the energy transition, and there's a mandate globally from capital providers to invest in this broader sector. And they've done that in the traditional generation, renewable assets, wind, solar. There's now a requirement to invest in batteries effectively. And so it's a necessary sort of part of energy transition. And so people have had to become educated quickly in order to, you know, meet requirements for capital deployment.
So yeah, like you sort of described, especially within the Australian context, well, in the NEM, sort of battery energy storage revenues are, you know, very sort of merchant focused, very volatile. Is that something that lenders are completely happy dealing with, or, you know, where's the balance of that today?
Yeah, so happy maybe wouldn't be the word I'd used, and not for debt or equity, right? And we often get asked, you know, do our clients want to take merchant risk? And if you think about the investor universe here, it's you know, often infrastructure investors or strategics who probably, you know, don't want to take lots of merchant risk or exposure. And then the same goes for lenders who, you know, more conservative part of the capital structure on the basis of being, you know, debt, senior secured, lower return expectation generally doesn't go hand in hand with taking risk merchant exposure. So everyone in the market would like a level of contracting, I would say, for the most part. It's just about getting the right balance to underwrite a capital structure. Now, there's a preparedness and willingness to look at that and an understanding that volatility is part of the market, but it's a bit of a balance. So we are starting to see some fully merchant projects close from a debt and an equity perspective, but I would say that's less common, it's less frequent, and wouldn't optimize the capital structure. It's those projects that have a base level of contracting, potentially even with some plans to go and get incremental contracting, that will secure, you know, greater price structure, quantum of debt, and will have a more long-term sustainable capital structure.
Yeah, and so I guess by contracting in this context, yeah, so these are kind of private, like offtake contract agreements mostly, as opposed to say like market-based, like long-term contracts, like we see in other sort of regions. Because there's been a bit of a shift in that, because I guess we could start off with say like the old kind of 100% physical toll of an asset, which is quite a simple thing then to get your head around. But now we're moving to things, yeah, virtual tolls and partial contracting an asset. You know, how have lenders been able to get on board with this?
Yeah, again, it's education, and what we spend a lot of our time doing is understanding it for ourselves. There is a new, emerging, rapidly evolving contracting market in Australia. You're right to say, you know, the market probably started with full physical tolls 10, 15, 20 years, relatively vanilla. You're now seeing virtual tolls, capacity swaps. There's a number of government tender processes, whether or not that's LTESA, SIPS, System Strength Services. And, you know, the market is having to get educated and understand these products. I would say that's happened, you know, relatively quickly. It's just about understanding the risk allocation. And it's not just as simple as, well, this is a fixed for floating payment. There's other operational elements of risk which need to be understood, and they're different. It's not every virtual toll, not every capacity swap manages those risks in the same way. And so you really need to understand the details. It's working with technical advisors, legal advisors, you know, commercial and market advisors to understand the allocation of those risks and what it means for a specific project.
From what you see, is there kind of a preference for a specific type of contracting structure in the market, or is it still quite early?
Yeah, it depends on the risk allocation. I think we're increasingly seeing virtual tolls be a more common contracting arrangement, and part of the reason for that is the sort of the layering and the ability to sort of bring in multiple off-takers, which is a contrast to a physical toll historically, where it's sort of all or nothing. Someone takes 100% of the capacity of the asset, or you don't have a toll at all. Virtual tolls allow greater flexibility in terms of you know, the contract with counterparties, as well as the operation of the batteries, and there's capacity to optimize there. We are also seeing, you know, capacity swaps more commonly, but there's probably less potential flexibility there in terms of how you layer in other contracts.
I guess, yeah, so the capacity swap is a bit of a sort of almost like a sort of revenue share type deal, but it's purely on the offtake side.
Yeah.
Is how I would describe it, I think.
Yeah, it's effectively you're agreeing with a party that you're going to operate the battery in a certain way. Let's call it profit maximization. You're going to have a joint operating protocol that you both sign up to. Typically, an auto bidder is going to be actually, you know, doing the heavy lifting there. And then you agree to kind of receive a fixed payment and pay back to them a proportion of the battery's actual revenue as a floating payment. I guess in contrast to a virtual toll where you could technically operate the battery in a different way to virtual instructions you're effectively receiving. So it's just the operations of the battery could be misaligned, I guess, between those two contracting structures.
And you mentioned we have seen some pure merchant projects get financed. Is there anything kind of fundamentally different in, so yeah, the structure of those deals compared to those with some contracting element?
Yeah, there's just a extra layer of conservatism applied because there's greater uncertainty in the revenue stack, and effectively we're saying seeing lenders not want to sort of take full risk on that basis. And if you think about a base level of contracting in contrast to a fully merchant project, you know that a certain level of capital return or debt repayments is going to be underwritten by that contract. Makes it easier to form a view on that merchant component where you've got none of that and you're effectively, 100% exposed to the market, and you're committing to that a couple of years before you're even into revenue because a project needs to get built. There's just that extra layer of conservatism that's applied. Potentially you could have different structural features within a deal, whether or not that's cash sweeps to accelerate amortization of debt, things like of that nature, potentially, or incentives. So lenders saying, why don't we encourage you to go and get a contract? Why don't we put in place a step up in your gearing so that when you do go and secure that contract, we're actually happy to pre-agree to give you, extra funding in that circumstance. And so trying to create alignment, I guess, with contracting.
Got it. And I mean, if we think, the sort of, I guess, the scale of the pipeline for battery energy storage in Australia and them is enormous. Do you think, so is there enough, let's say, like liquidity on the offtake side to provide contracts for all of these to keep kind of to have the investor community happy?
At the moment, there's sufficient offtakes in the market at a price that's attractive enough for people to commit to building projects. We're working on a number of them, and we're assisting with some offtake procurement, and we're seeing there is still good liquidity in the market. It is different state by state, so some parts of the national electricity market are going to have greater demand than others, but that'll constantly be evolving. So the fact that we see that today, it'll really be driven by what does the demand profile and outlook look like over time, and what is the build out of batteries. And so one of the things which both debt and equity are concerned about when they think about merchant exposure is, could there be an overbuild of batteries? What will that mean for my revenue structure if I'm exposed to merchant? And that is part of the reason, I guess, why people do want to contract, because that could impact on liquidity and the price on which people are prepared to offer offtakes.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of like a fundamental element. Like, even if, you have sort of, let's say, long-term confidence that there is the volatility in the market, you can't guarantee that's going to be rising year on year to provide you the cash flow to ultimately pay off your financing.
Yeah.
I mean, within that, like, what's the kind of role that some of the government-backed sort of schemes offer? So, I mean, there's the capacity investment scheme and the New South Wales, like LTESA. Like, is that playing a role as well in helping projects like get the financing done?
Yeah, it's definitely playing a role. I don't think it's a standalone solution. If you look at projects which have secured government offtakes, whether or not that's through the CIS, LTESA, SIPS, System Strength Services, in almost all cases, it's been paired with some other form of offtake. I do think it's an important part of the market in terms of supporting capital deployment into energy storage build out, particularly when it comes to specific use cases. So longer duration, the economics could be marginal, but there's a requirement for longer duration to support needs in the grid. And so those form of government subsidies, LTESA in particular, is a great example of how, you know, that can provide that market signal before the economics might make sense to kind of incentivize private capital. But we are seeing a shift into longer duration. So we're starting to see projects on a four-hour basis without government support go and get third-party private offtake contracts and still get the capital required in order to get built. And so they're playing a role, I guess, in terms of starting, you know, that sort of pathway, and also supporting, I guess, projects and underwriting, particularly on a downside, some of that risk. But we are seeing different investors play in that market in different ways. So there's very different bidding strategies, I guess, that we've seen, particularly on the capacity investment scheme.
Yeah, that's not always overly obvious to, I guess, those looking into the market, kind of what those different structures are. So in some ways then, so at the moment, it's kind of playing a role, but not like on its own in terms of supporting some of this investment?
No, not on the basis of what we've observed. It's not a support mechanism standalone. It's definitely been important in terms of supporting projects in combination with, you know, third-party commercial offtakes or whatever it is, but we haven't seen it, I guess, yet be a standalone solution other than in some of the longer duration examples with the LTESA in particular, or if there's been a specific need. So take Waratah, for example, that contract that was put in place had a very specific purpose. And so, you know, that was able to underwrite a very large project.
So we discussed kind of liquidity in the offtake market. If we think about, I guess, the other assets which are needed, so yeah, I guess capacity in the capital markets, but also just from those, you know, helping advise like yourself on these projects, is there enough capacity at the moment in Australia to support the battery energy storage pipeline?
Yeah, I think at the moment that there is, and it's the part of the market where we probably see the most liquidity in terms of renewable energy investment in Australia. Projects which are sort of, you know, at a ready-to-build stage, so ready to start construction in the battery energy storage space, is probably where we see peak liquidity, and there's a lack of investable opportunity. So, you know, there aren't a lot of operating batteries at this stage. And so, you know, even if someone wanted to invest in, acquire an operating battery, there's not many that exist currently, and there's even fewer of those that might be for sale. And so there's a huge pool of liquidity trying to get access to this market, both on the debt and equity side. Now, that'll obviously, you know, change over time as more of these assets get built. There's more developers in the market. There's more assets that'll be available. But in terms of the actual requirement at the moment, I'd say, yeah, that there's more liquidity than is required and for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, so a lot of our focus has been on sort of new projects. But yeah, so do you think, yeah, we'll get to a point where there'll be appetite to, yeah, sort of buy some of the projects and portfolios which are operational?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's probably on the generation side where, you know, the market saw peak liquidity a few years ago was people investing in operating, you know, solar wind projects. And so I think similarly, when there is actually a market there and investors looking to recycle capital, you will find that there's a more developed market there. There just isn't the liquidity at the moment. There isn't the availability of assets.
Okay. And I guess, yeah, you kind of touched on it a bit there, because obviously there's different elements that need financing within the energy transition in Australia. Like, would you say there's kind of competition between the battery energy storage space and renewables, or for that, I guess, what's available, or is it sort of two standalone pots?
Some investors will only invest in battery energy storage, but generally you're seeing people invest across a wider array of assets, and that would typically be sort of, you know, renewable energy, wind, solar, batteries. For some, you know, it's even broader than that, broader infrastructure mandate. And so at the moment, there's a lot of activity in the market. And so that does mean there is competition for capital, and it could be between a solar farm and a wind farm and a battery, and people may have to choose where they allocate, you know, their time, resources, as well as their capital. And we definitely are seeing that sort of, call it, competition between processes at the moment. And human resource is one of the biggest constraints that we see for investors, because there might be 10 assets that fit their mandate, but they only have the human resources to look at two or three at any one point in time. And so they have to prioritize, they have to pick and choose what it is that they're going to look at.
I guess looking forward, like, do you see anything evolving on the sort of financing of assets in Australia, or the energy assets in Australia? You know, there's obviously market reforms on the way. Do you think they might play like a role in structurally changing, you know, the financing space?
Yeah, I think the market will always be evolving. The offtake strategy and the willingness to take merchant exposure is probably the one we've seen change the most over the last couple of years, from fully, you know, 100% contracted physical toll assets through to, you know, beginning of this year, starting to see fully merchant projects get financed. And I think you'll continue to see, you know, more of that happening, and potentially even a more progressive approach to, you know, how people think about merchant exposure. I also think you'll start to see, you know, differential contracting offtake strategies as well. And that'll be across asset classes. So it might involve batteries, but it might involve a broader pool of assets, maybe on the generation side, more of a capacity swap style contract. We're starting to see that on hybrid projects, and we're starting to see more and more, you know, portfolio financings. And so the lender community actually looking at assets on more of a holistic basis. And I think that'll be a key differentiator for investors in this space, those that actually have multiple assets at their disposal and the capacity to sort of think about things in a more holistic way.
Yeah, the hybrid sort of projects, the things that actually we haven't really touched on, which I guess is kind of the next wave of, you know, projects to come through. Maybe we'll have to touch on that in a future conversation. Just to wrap up, you know, we always finish with two questions. And so the first of which is there anything you would like to plug?
Oh, sure. If people are looking to buy an asset, sell an asset, raise capital for an asset, secure an offtake for an asset in the energy and renewables space, then, you know, that's us, that's Azure Capital. So feel free to come and talk to us.
So basically, yeah, if there's any interest in anything to do with investing in storage, you're the person to speak to.
Yeah.
And finally, do you have a contrarian view?
It's probably around investment in the market at the moment. And we talked about how, you know, batteries are probably where there's peak liquidity, lots of investment happening in that space. And some people have moved away from some of the traditional generation assets, and, you know, in particular, operating solar assets. I'd say there's less liquidity in the market at the moment. And I actually think countercyclically, the risk-adjusted returns look relatively attractive in that part of the market. And if one of your concerns around batteries are that there could be overbuild, there could be a compression of gross margins, then the beneficiary of that, you know, is likely to be operating solar farms. And so in some ways that could be a natural hedge. And, you know, if your mandate allows you to invest across sort of a wider asset class, then I'd be encouraging you to sort of look at that, because I think it looks relatively attractive at the moment.
Yeah, because I guess there's been a sort of fairly common refrain that, like, utility scale solar is sort of dead, but you're saying it doesn't have to be.
No, and I wouldn't say it's dead necessarily. I'd just say there are market-related challenges for solar assets around negative pricing, thermal grid curtailment, you know, performance. And so, you know, those are factors that will continue to evolve and exist, but are relatively well understood, I think, can be priced. And I think with the build-out of batteries, some of them will be mitigated. And so there's an opportunity at the moment where there's less liquidity sort of in that part of the market. And so I just think that represents sort of an interesting and attractive investment opportunity.
Awesome. I think that's a good place to finish on. So Harrison, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. And thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks for having me.